We know that health and safety are always top of mind for you. The same is true for the good people at UniMac. That's why they offer a tailored PPE gear cleaning solution that is easy to use. With certified training courses and their FireLink technology, following and tracking NFPA 1851 standards are a breeze. When it comes to a full solution for your crew, demand the total package. To learn more, visit unimac.com/firelink.
Intro. Okay. Set the mood.
Masterpiece Theater.
What Pete Portillo told me, it's a juxtaposition. It's just a... It's supposed to be a joke. I don't know if people get the joke. Okay, welcome to another edition of the First Two Battalion Chief. I'm Danny Sheridan, and with the New York City Fire Department. And tonight, I'm again honored to have two deputy chiefs, one from Boston and one from New York. I have Chuck Downey from New York, and I have Steve Schaefer from Boston. And welcome, guys, and thanks again for being here tonight. I appreciate you taking the time to share some of your wealth of knowledge with us and the audience. So tonight, we're going to talk about May Days. I brought it up. I guess, Chucky, you might have prompted me on this, that we were doing this. It was just a coincidence that we're doing this right now as our...
yes, right.
What do you call it again, Chucky? What's that word that you use when we're doing it with all the chiefs?
Strategic awareness training. So it came out of Annual Education Day for chief officers in 2017 that, you know... battalion chiefs and deputy chiefs wanted more training. So that's how it evolved into strategic awareness training for chiefs, you know, in service training. As you experienced this past week, we actually had May Days as you had. So the month of February is May Days.
Right. Right. So how about you, Steve, up in Boston, you guys do anything with the other chiefs? Do you ever get together and kind of do some roundtable stuff?
We just started. We're trying to. We had some chiefs development training last year where we did reading smoke, and then we did a simulation with sectoring off a multiple alarm fire. We had some, you know, simulated radio traffic. It was like a simulation. And that actually was more well received than I thought it would be. So we're trying to continue that, but we don't have anything programmed yet.
Right, right. So. It was ironic. I was up a few weeks ago with you, and you guys were actually doing some kind of May Day drill with the EFES, which Chucky could tell you that we've been – Chuck, how long have we been doing this EFES now for? I think I was maybe a captain when this EFES started. I think – did we create this? Did we invent this EFES? I vividly remember going to the 6th Division – being in there, apparatus floor, and some guys came in, and they're like, here's this new thing, this EFES, and I was like, wow, like, how cool is that, you know, and they showed us, and I was like, this is great, like, you know, you basically, you know who's calling you, right? So with our EFES, right, it's the, what does it stand for, the Electronic Firefighter Assist, is it?
Accountability system.
Electronic Firefighter Accountability System, right, right. So how it works for, I know Steve, we'll get into that in a second with Steve, because they have, they call it the same thing, but it's a slightly different version, and I kind of like theirs too, but I think ours works pretty well. And our battalion cars, I don't know if, do you have them in a division, Chuck? I'm not sure if the divisions have them as well.
EFAS. Yeah, the divisions have them, the battalions, as well as the portable EFAS now that we have, right?
Right, right. Right. So how it works is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it works in with our radios, right? So the handy talkie, the company, I think the company has to click in to get the company on the scene. And then we have on the right-hand side of the computer, we have the companies that are logged in. And then as each firefighter or officer clicks their, or myself, if we click our handy talkie, it comes up on the screen. It gives your name, your position, the time, and I can't think of it. There's four things I know. The name,
yeah,
position,
yeah,
the company,
yeah,
number, and the company number.
The company, you're right. Company number, company position, the time that you actually transmitted, and your name.
Right.
And just recently, about in the fall, Dan, this is real new. In the fall, they added another column, a flag column. And we put out tips from training. Yeah, we just put a tips for training out not even 2 weeks ago. So there's a new EFAS flagging column, we call it. So you can actually, you know, the EFAS firefighter, if he has a garbled message or maybe someone in trouble, he can flag that time, that name, that company position, so that if it evolves into something, he can go back to that or she can go back to that. So that's brand new that we just we sent out a training tip on. You know, it was being piloted since the fall. But
I might have missed that because of the
ether.
Right.
Yeah,
I've been
it came
at the
down
Rock
at the end of
months.
The month of January.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did see that. I guess I didn't pay too much attention to it. But Steve, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your EFAS. I know that it's still kind of a work in progress with you. I think you're going to send it to all the district chiefs, I think, right? Is that how it works?
Yeah, so I'm not, you know, I wasn't in on the development, but as I understand it, you have to pay, or the department has to pay a license for every laptop or device that it's on, in addition to every radio. So currently we only have three. The plan is, they're like in Pelican cases. It's and you have to plug a radio into it, tuned to the fire ground frequency. Our radios are different than yours. We have repeaters. It's like a citywide fire ground channel, as opposed to your local handy talkies. But anyway, the plan is that it'll be in every command vehicle, every chief's car and every deputy's car. Somebody fires up the radio to the right channel, and then it automatically, our radios send out a signal, so you don't have to click. It'll automatically pick up every radio assigned to that incident in the CAD. And start populating the screen as they show up, and then it shows the same thing. It shows the company, the designation. I don't think we have names in there. It's just it'll say engine 5 officer, ladder 26 roof, whatever your radio is labeled as. It'll indicate whether your radio is on or off and what channel you're tuned into. If you're on the wrong channel, that'll show up. And for me, aside from showing you everybody's there, so it's kind of like an automatic whiteboard. You know who's on scene. You don't know where they are necessarily, but at least you know they're there, is it has 16 pre-programmed signals that you can send out to an individual radio, a group of radios, or everybody on the scene. And the one that I'm really interested in, I think really matters, is the PAR. We've had a few incidents, my incident I'll talk about maybe later, where it took over 40 minutes to do a PAR. It ended up being a 9-alarm fire, but it's really not workable if something goes wrong, there's a hostile fire event or, a collapse, and you want to get a quick read on who's maybe not okay, this you can send out to every single radio on a digital signal, accountability request, and the radio squawks really loudly, accountability request, and keeps doing that until you push the, push to talk button. And that push to talk, when you acknowledge, it's digital, so it doesn't step on radio transmissions on that frequency over the radio. So I think it's, a really quick way. Something happens or you just want a PAR report. It's not quite the same. It's not the officer acknowledging he knows where all his guys are. It's an individual, hey, I'm okay. If you acknowledge, it means you're good, If you don't acknowledge, we have to assume something's wrong. And so I think it'll push out the other message we have, or, orderly evacuation, emergency evacuation, stay off the roof, the 16 of them. And Those, I think, are less important because we've been doing a good job of doing that stuff over the radio. But one of the nice things about that is that people, if you put out one of those messages, people have to click, unless they want to hear the radio keep squawking it, that they've acknowledged it, that they at least you say, okay, they acknowledge that message. They know that they're supposed to evacuate. It's not like that got lost in transmission. So,
right.
And that's... As I understand it, that's EFAS now. We're rolling it out at our back to basics, our live fire training, which is weekly, 9 months of the year in the good weather. And we have a sort of a separate drill within that where two companies come down and an accountability chief and their RIT chief run a sort of a Mayday drill with using the EFAS.
Right. So Steve, excuse me, I had a little technical issue here, but the way ours works is we have this firefighter that's on the RIT team or the fast truck, and what he'll do is when I first get there, my driver, my aide, is responsible for the EFAS, and he'll monitor all the transmissions until the fast truck gets there. Once the fast truck gets there, he sits in my car, and he monitors the EFAS. Now, your system requires – are you going to use the accountability chief for that, did you say? I'm kind of –
Well, that's the plan. So we kind of load up on a struck box, an alarm of fire. They'll send the district chief. As soon as it's confirmed fire, you get a safety chief shows up, right? Mm-hmm. Currently, the accountability chief, we have another district chief who was assigned at a multiple alarm, a second or higher, as accountability, and his job is to go and, run the whiteboard and basically try and keep track of where everybody is. But and I think that the way it works in practice is that the safety chief kind of, that's one of his sort of duties until the accountability shows up, if it's going to escalate. And so we haven't quite noodled it out. We want to do some training so that guys don't, if they get tech, nothing worse than giving guys technology and not having adequate training, and then they go, oh, this doesn't work, I don't understand it. And they throw it back in the buggy and they never use it. So it'll either be the safety chief who starts it up, and then if it escalates the accountability, or we'll just start sending accountability on a working fire as opposed to waiting until a second alarm. That decision is now going to be made above me, but and we, I know you guys, we have we also send a RIT chief on a confirmed fire, right? So we have a RIT group. It's a chief, an engine, and a truck once it's a confirmed fire. And I think that it's a benefit to have another chief officer, because if something does go wrong, it's really hard to run the fire and run, my experience anyway, run the fire and run the Mayday, concurrently. The same guy trying to do both.
Right. Well, Steve, let me ask you a question then. Do you, the way we work is I'm the first two battalion chief.
Yeah.
If I give a working fire, I get another chief. He becomes my sector chief or my all hands chief. Do you have that in Boston? Do you have another chief coming in?
On a second alarm, we get a second alarm chief, and that's, it becomes a sector. We also, the deputy, I don't typically go unless it's right in my wheelhouse, right around where I'm stationed, until it's a second alarm. And then when I do, I assume command, and the initial battalion or district chief up here becomes operations. So, and then there's a second alarm chief comes, and he can be assigned to the rear of the building, the roof, whatever else, just an extra sector commander.
So from what I understand, then Chucky, I kind of like what they do. They send on a smoke or a fire, like for phone alarm, we would call it phone alarm for fire. They send a RIT engine. Right? Am I correct, Steve?
The RIT engine goes right on the box. And then if it's
on the box,
confirmed fire, they fill out the RIT assignment, which is a truck and a RIT chief.
Right. So the way we do it.
How many engines do you have on your initial assignment for a structural fire?
Structural fire is with the RIT engine, it's four engines, two trucks, and a rescue.
Right.
So 4, 2, and 1, and that fourth one is your RIT engine, and then you get another chief and a truck, right?
Correct.
With the RIT? Yeah.
To fill out the RIT if it's a confirmed fire,
Right, right. Yeah.
But, Chucky, I think they go to a second alarm pretty quickly for a good working fire, faster than we would, because – what we generally do in New York is if we have a really good working fire, if you're listening to the radio and you hear a chief say, we're going to use all hands on arrival and I need an extra engine and truck, you could pretty much guess that something's going on. It's not just a one-room fire, So,
right.
I mean, Chucky, would you say that's a good assessment of, what happens in New York?
Yeah, no, definitely. Don't forget, we get on a structural working fire 1075 with our radio code. So we're getting four engines, three trucks, two BCs, a DC, rescue, and squad. That's a lot of units for just a structural fire. So we're loaded up to begin with. But you know, if like Danny's saying, if we're saying extra engine truck right away, all hands right away, it's probably at that point where I might need more than two lines, and usually that's a good, you know, for something we teach the younger BCs. If you're going to need more than two hand lines, you got your second alarm going.
Right. Well,
you know.
Yeah, that's similar. You know. We have three engines on that first alarm. So if you have to stretch a third line, you're out of bullets. That's a second
right.
alarm. You know, you have no other
right.
backup, right? So you're going to have it coming.
Right. Right, exactly. And is it a PD, or, you know, a four-story brownstone, or is it a six-story tenement, right? So a lot
right.
of things vary with that. So, yeah, no, that's interesting. That's I like the concept of the fast, well, you guys say RIT, you know, different parts of the country, right?
Yeah.
RIT. But, you know, that team, I think it should be engines, truck, and a chief, because as we know.
Oh, I like that, yeah.
They make. Yeah, it's a very small percentage. If you start looking at some of the statistics, that they actually find the member, the mayday, the rescue, you know, it's a very small percentage. But, you know, whether you need tools, you need, you know, oxygen, you need fast pack, you need, you know, ropes, you need a hand line to put in the window.
Sometimes,
you know,
exactly.
You
sometimes you need the protection of a line, you know?
Yeah, so I like that concept of the one-on-one, you know, for a RIT or FAST in New York. But that's something I think we're going to be evaluating after this month of May Days. There's a deputy already assigned to looking into our May Days, and you know, we can write probably a short manual on everything we're supposed to do as an intercommander with the May Days. So it's a lot of stuff that we need to condense, but I like that, Steve, what you guys do up there.
Yeah, I agree, Chuck, 100%. You know, one of the things that I do, and I know Chucky does it as well because we talk about this a lot, but, you know, I'll be driving into work, and I think about May Days, and if I get a May Day, and which I just had one like a week ago, and we'll get into that in about a few minutes. But my plan for May Day is, you know, I have my fast truck, my RIT, and I right away would get an engine, and I would get a chief together and make the chief, my all-hands chief, I'd make him my RIT. He would be my fast sector. And then I have my rescue and my squad depending on, you know, where they are in the building. Like we talked about this the other day, how, you know, the rescue and the squad for us are like the wild cards. You know, like they're the guys that kind of could fill in some of the holes, you know. But you don't want to you want to hold one of those wild cards back, you know. And
sure.
So that's what I generally do in my mind. I say, okay, I got a situation here. I know I could either call on the rescue, the squad, plus my fast truck, and then try to get an engine, because I'm thinking, like you said, water, right? We talk about when there's a mayday, we address the fire, the air, the injury, and then the R would be the recovery, right? So that's kind of the way we should be handling maydays. But I absolutely do like what Boston does, Chucky, and I think I really do hope it's something that we look at, because I think you do need the engine.
Yeah.
Because even just for CFR alone, I mean, even if they come with this
sure.
CFR equipment,
you know. Without a doubt. Well, that handling,
which is nice.
There's so much.
One of the other things we've done the last few years, Dan and Chuck, is if you look at the Project Mayday statistics, most maydays are resolved by companies that are already in the building. So starting three years ago, I had Lieutenant Hayes, or it's now Captain Hayes, one of our really good trainers. That's his passion is firefighting, like self-rescue and survival. They started doing a program in the winter months when Back to Basics was off of, he called the first one Firefighter Safety and Survival, but it was really like rescue on our own. We had companies come down three at a time and simulate a mayday, but they weren't the RIT. They were already in the building, stretching a line, doing their thing. And then they had to find the downed firefighter, convert his pack, and drag him out. And in full gear on air, they used a weighted hose. So it wasn't charged, but it was, you know, one of those training hoses that's weighted two and a half. And they went over procedures to strip and start CPR, like how to quickly get a guy out of his bunker gear once you get him out. And they used, instead of dummies, they used live instructors. Those guys took a beating, but because it's different moving a guy than it is moving a dummy.
Yeah.
And that was some really tough training, but it was pretty well received. And then they piggybacked this year. They're doing some of the stuff from the fire ground survival, like getting to a confined, a small space, like in between studs, low, doing the entrapment, the wire, the wire box. So like simulating a collapse ceiling. So it's just, I think it's an important component to realize that it's not just the fast truck or the RIT that's necessarily going to make the grab. You got to also get guys in building like used said, to.
It's a very small percentage. I think it's like 11% according to, the Mayday project. It's very small, and in my experience, it's the same thing. I've seen it in New York City. It's the fast truck very rarely. Yeah, they might get in there and bring the fast pack. They might assist, when the firefighter is on the stoop or outside, but it is very rare that they do something.
Yeah.
I think, like we were saying, it's like 11% according to Abbott.
Yeah. So, Steve, I think I was up there. I went to that trailer where they do the tech rescue stuff. Kenny Hayes is the captain, right? Yeah, he's a good guy, Kenny. And he actually brought me, me and John Stapleton went through the whole maze. And I tell you what, it's quite challenging. I thought maybe even a wee bit too much, but you know what? You can't really overdo it when it comes to this stuff because, we have to practice like we play, right? That's what I always say. So
The final station was that two floors where it's completely blacked out, sweet smoke, you're on air. They've got stressors. They've got the accountability request on a radio playing, so that guy's shouting in your ear. And the whole company has to go through and navigate over. It's like a hoarder situation. You got to crawl over a bunch of stuff. I went through it. I did it. I went down the second or third day they did it and went through with the company.
Right.
It wasn't. So. It wasn't easy. I told them I wasn't doing it again.
So anyway, this whole business about Maydays, I was thinking about what you were saying about how most of the Maydays are the recoveries come from the guys that are the firefighters that are actually already in the building, And I remember when I first came on the job, going to a few fires where there were some Maydays, and half the firefighters didn't have radios back then. I mean, I usually didn't have a radio because I usually had the can or the irons, and a lot of the engine firefighters didn't have radio. So Mayday back then, we didn't have the fast trucks. We didn't have the RIT teams back then. So the ones that I did go to were kind of chaotic. The Mayday would happen. The Mayday would happen, and then what would happen is I remember one I was at one time. I must have had just about a year or two on a job. We had two floors of fire in a tenement, and guy fell off the roof into a shaft, and basically everyone just dropped what they were doing, and they started going, they started shimmying drain pipes and breaching walls, and meanwhile the fire's still roaring, we had like two floors of fire, so I think we really have evolved, and we've made so much progress in the protecting our own, I think it's one of these things. Here's how I look at it. It's one of these things that it's very low frequency, thank God, but the high stakes.
Yeah.
Nothing higher. And let's talk about two things right now, and then we'll move on into the actual Maydays. But what I'm finding about the actual Mayday, and I think, Chucky, and I want to hear your opinion on this, is that we've gotten very complacent because when I came on a job, they gave us a plastic alarm that you had to switch on with a battery. It had a 9-volt battery in it, and you put it on your waist strap, and you're supposed to click it on. It was called the pass device, right? It was the
pass
early
device,
version of the pass.
Yep.
The old
yep.
plastic ones that clipped on your belt, And half the time, half the time, no one turned them on anyway. But now we've kind of gone to the other extreme where firefighters, it's integrated into the air pack, right? So it's so common now to be listening on the radio and you're calling companies, Battalion 3 to Engine 9-6, what's going on? All you're hearing is the chirping in the back. And we've become desensitized to these pass devices. And because I don't know what the number is, if it's 20 seconds or 30 seconds where someone doesn't move, they start chirping.
20,
and
20 a pre-alarm, 30 goes into full alarm. Yeah, ours anyway.
Exactly. So do you find, and I'm asking both of you, are you getting desensitized to these things? Chucky?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's a good point. Like, you know, we're similar to Boston. I think we're 12 and 20, but I think it's a really good point you bring out, the because they are constantly going off, you know, and the pre-alarm. And we, you know, even though we have the pack tracker, and that's very hard to read when a bunch of them are going off and locking it out. But we also have the EABs, which we didn't have, Dan, when we didn't, everyone didn't have a radio. Now everyone has a radio and everyone has an EAB, and they're going off quite often as well. Not as much, obviously, as the integrated pass alarms, but we are definitely, I think you hit it on the head. There is a desensitization to that because we hear it so frequently.
Oh, right. I couldn't agree more. That's all you hear. And, you know, if I'm looking at videos of fires or other places, that's, you know, we don't really hear them going off. And yeah, nobody, when you hear that noise, you don't assume somebody's in trouble. You assume somebody's not moving to put their pack down and, you know, just, you know, hey, whose pack is that? Who's going to shut that thing off?
Right, sure.
And the same with, you know, well, the EAB, occasionally we get, you know, somebody hits it by mistake and it comes through, but less so. But I know Danny and I were talking about this earlier. When someone says Mayday, they're generally not saying that casually. Someone takes the time, especially up here, if they actually say Mayday, that something's going on, you know, and that's going to perk right up. So, I pine for the old days when the fire ground was kind of quiet.
Yeah.
When it first came on, there were no pass devices, you know.
Right.
Just
when we're going.
But not even
the radio. Everybody's got a radio now.
Right? We all didn't have radios. That's, you know, now everyone has a radio.
Everyone has a radio.
So there's the good and the bad with it.
Yeah. Well, so here, let me, I'll tell you a little story. So I'll go first. I had a Mayday about a week ago. And, you know, here's the thing with the Maydays. I want to ask your opinion about this as well. Because, like, I know, I don't think we're going to really have time to go over these whole, I know there's a sheet by the Don Abbott, the 16 phrases that should alert the incident commander. I think it's basically everything that, you know, we would imagine, right? It's really getting hot in here. We're backing out. Our exit's been blocked. We have lost multiple windows. We have a ceiling collapse, flashover. I mean, this is all common sense. We're running out of air. It's a hoarder condition. We can't find the fire. All this stuff, you know, should start prompting the incident commander to think like, let me start listening here. And one of my cues, and it's happened twice now in the last few years, is that if I'm calling an officer, like the other night I called the ladder one, let's say, you know, I'm command to ladder one, you know, what's going on? And I hear the vibrant alert going off in the background. And I heard his vibrant alert, and I'm calling him back, and I'm like, listen, I got another truck company here. I'm going to relieve you. I want you to start making your way out. And so I was with the deputy chief. And we were just kind of, I had a lot going on. I had some issues with civilians that were missing and whatnot. And I had people that weren't really where they were supposed to be. So I was trying to manage this whole thing. And right after that, the deputy, he said, Danny, did you just hear that? And I said, no. What were you talking about? He said, there was a Mayday. And then I heard it again. And then, of course, we had the Mayday. And what I did immediately is I said, Joe, you take it. I'm going to keep running the fire. You got the Mayday. And then he took it. And he, you know, we sent the RIT team in there, and he wound up getting out. His own Irons firefighter found him. One of the things I wanted to talk about, which I didn't do with that fire, and I normally do it, is using the RIT team to maybe throw some portables up or dress up the building. I didn't do that. And like, 'cause I got so distracted with a lot of nonsense that was going on. But the one thing that didn't happen at this fire was I was very grateful he gave the Mayday. It was a true Mayday. He was lost. He thought he was going down the stairs. He wound up in an off room. The bureau, the dresser fell behind the door. It closed behind him. There was no windows. He was totally disorientated, and he was out of air. I knew he was out of air. He never hit the EAB. And had he hit the EAB, I would have heard it because it boosts the, what was it, Chucky? It boosts it to 5 watts, I think, right, when he hit the EAB?
Yep, 2 to 5, exactly.
2 to 5. So what happened was in the EFAS, firefighter had to manually put in the Mayday. Then we got the Mayday. So, you know, two things I learned from that. A, he should have used his EAB. And secondly, he should have activated his pass device because then we would know where he was, you know. And it got resolved very quickly. His Irons fire heard him giving the Mayday. He forced the door. He grabbed them, brought them down. He was out of there. He was all good. And it was a nice story. So, my point is too is that I kind of knew it was coming, but I don't know how to describe it. When it happens, it's almost like this denial thing happens. Like, no, this isn't happening. You know, it's like, no,
yeah. Right, you don't know. Right, yeah.
No, this isn't real. This is going to be another, you know. So it was real, though. It was a legitimate, real Mayday. And thank God, by the grace of God, it got resolved, you know. But, you know, I learned, like, three things just from that, I, you know, things that I normally do and I didn't do, you know. So I know, Chucky, you've had a you had a few Maydays. You had one recently. What was that all about?
Yeah, no, I've had two in the last few months, but yeah, I mean, without going into too deep of detail, but I think as an incident commander, you know, I've had them over the years. As Steve was getting to before, as far as their training, in 2005 we started doing MOAD trainings with the BCs, and I was promoted 2004, so I was a guinea pig at the ROC for the MOADs. Which are the mother of all drills, where they give you a Mayday, usually collapse.
Right.
I think that really helped me to really bring it out to the field and say, all right, there is a lot we have to do, and it's almost impossible to do it by yourself. You know, so you definitely have to delegate. I think the last two that I had just recently, you know, now being in this role as a deputy, where most of my Maydays were as battalion chiefs, as a battalion chief. The last two as a deputy, it's a lot easier from my perspective. I truly believe in the BC running the fire and the deputy waiting for that Mayday, that urgent, that strategy of do we need a second alarm? Do we need something covered that not being covered? So my role is simplified now, being a deputy. And I think, you know, getting back to the overall, without getting the details with these, it's if you're by yourself as an incident commander, it's very difficult. And you almost have to, you know, we have all these acronyms, right? You know, as far as, you know, what's the member supposed to say, what's the IC supposed to do. But I think what we're looking to do is just simplify that, both from an incident commander's point of view, because when you're by yourself, it's hard. It's very hard. But, you know, just like the who, what, where, and, you know, an acronym I picked up back when I was first a new BC was, you know, CIA, you know, control the radio, ID the member, and assign resources. So, and the who, what, where is what I want to get from that member transmitting. You know, I know we have Lunar in the books and all this other stuff, that these big words, but those two, I think, really helped me as an incident commander. You know, now being a deputy, it's easy for me to walk up and, as you said, Dan, let the deputy handle that, because that first BC or that first chief has the beginning of the fire up until that point. So if there's no exchange of information in those heated conditions, that chief knows where they are, what we have, what's going on with the water situation. And that deputy or that second chief walking up has to take that, because it's right there. You don't need to know the full details of where everyone is. And, you know, getting back to, you know, BC 101, you know, that what and where, you got to know where the members are and you got to know what's going on, you know? So that part, that's why I like the BC staying with the fire. But yeah, there's a lot, you know, and I think the technology, whether it's EAB buttons and everyone having radios, and you have an emergency alert tone in the city, you have a beacon for the 5-5, now you have a pass alarm, so you have three different sounds on the fire ground, you know. I think what helps us now is the iPad, because the iPad actually sends an audible and visual now of who just transmitted that EAB, and that's why,
right,
I say we do have a lot of inadvertence, but
yeah,
it's just we got so many more tools, which are great. But it is a lot more stuff to cover, and we're not even talking about, you know, pack trackers and everything that we have. So it's a lot. I mean, I'm going off on a tangent, but I think
no, it's fine, Chucky. Yeah,
you know,
no, it's all good.
Yeah, I think CIA, you know, control the, you know, C is for control that radio, and
yeah,
radio discipline is a problem, you know, and then the I is ID, you know, right? because, as you said, most Maydays, that it's gobbled, they're screaming, you know, they're in a bad situation, and you don't always get that clear message. So you have to ID. So, you know, C is control the handy talkie, I is ID, and then obviously A is just the sign of resource, whether it's the RIT, the FAST, you know, the rescue, the squad, the all hands chief, whatever it's going to be. You know, to really simplify, rather than, we have so many procedures written in our books that we supposed to do, but it's, you know, and that's, it gets back to the old, you know, span of control and ICS and MPI, mental performance, how much you can really handle. You know, it starts extending and gets wider and wider.
Yeah.
But,
before we get into Steve, I want to throw this question out for the both of you, and I'll tell you my own experience. I think it's changing, and let me stop. If you want to call in, the number is 760-454-8852. We're with Chief Downey and Chief Schaefer, and we're talking about Mayday. So if you want to call in, feel free to call us in. But here's what I'm thinking, as far as Maydays. When I came on a job, it was a bit of a, I don't want to use the word stigma, but there was some kind of, it wasn't looked upon as something that, like, firefighters should do. Like, you should be able to handle yourself. And there was this reluctancy to give a Mayday. And I remember very distinctly, we had a covering officer. I was working in the squad, and he gave a Mayday. And it was kind of ridiculous because it was really not for anything. And they hammered this poor guy, I mean, to no end, you know. And, you know, I think we have this reluctancy to give a Mayday. I know myself, I should have given one. You know, here's the thing. Sometimes you get caught up in a flashover. All you're doing is you're looking for the ladder. You dive out the window. You're looking for the door. You know, it happened so fast. I mean, and the last time I got caught, I was on the top floor of a 3-story frame. It just flashed, like, I couldn't even think. I dove down the stairs, and I was shaking. I mean, I was that shooken up, you know. And I knew there was two guys behind me, and I should have given a Mayday. And I gave an urgent, you know. And then next thing you know, those two guys dove behind me and landed on top of me at the bottom of the stairs. But, you know, it's like this. For me, it was just like I just couldn't get myself to give a Mayday, you know. And I'm wondering, I think the culture is changing. I think guys now, firefighters are more receptive now to give them Maydays. And I'll ask you, Steve, what's your thoughts on the mentality, the stigma, or whatever there is associated with this whole Mayday concept?
Well, I think we might be a little behind you. I'm not sure that guys are still real hung up on, oh, I called a Mayday. Although, you know, if it turns out it was nothing, you know they're going to catch hell. But it's just that, you know, I think it's a matter of training. Is that there have been several instances here, you have to go back a little ways, but where guys have just said, we need help up here. Especially we had a couple of attic fires where that was the message. And it's like, well, you know, the ladder, you know, like, you know, those guys those guys on Harrisoff Street, they were hanging out on a little, not even a roof. It was like a little ledge outside a window because the attic let go on them. You know, somebody saw them, got a ladder up and got them down. But, you know, all they said is, we need help up here. We'll bring a ladder. I think that one was, they said, we need a ladder up here. Instead of Mayday, we're, you know, the attic's flashed, we're hanging out the window, you know.
Right.
So it's getting that, you know, getting that, like, hey, you got to be, and we call it, our acronym is LIP, Location Identification Problem. Where are you? Right. Who are you? What's the problem? For the firefighter giving them the Mayday. But it's, I think it's starting to turn around. But I think it's a matter of more of a training issue than a cultural thing. I think it's just, guys, if you even think you're in trouble, give a Mayday.
Yeah. You know, to your point, Steve, there was a pilot from Colombia, Avianca Air. I forget, it was 87. I forget what year. I just might have been on the job, you know. And he was out of fuel. His plane was literally out of fuel. And I listened to the tapes, and it was something along the lines where the pilot said, you know, Avianca, whatever flight, we have an emergency. Like, it was just like – and then the radio traffic controllers – thought that he had plenty of time. They're like, okay, you know, just hang loose, do another lap or whatever, you know. And meanwhile, he was on fumes. And right. What he should have said was mayday. You know, mayday,
I'm out of fuel.
I'm out of fuel. And he crashed into the woods in Long Island somewhere. And, you know, it was just do you remember that crash, Truckee, the Avianca?
Yeah, up, up on the North Shore there in Nassau County, yeah.
Yeah. But, yes. You know, it had – but the – you know, when they did the review, they said if he had said mayday, the air traffic controllers would have just opened up the runway and say, hey, listen, we got the runway, go for it, you know. And it's just that terminology, you know. So I think it's changing, you know, and I think for the better. We had one, another one, Chucky. I think we had one in Harlem the other day. We had two maydays, and they were resolved pretty quickly. So,
Yeah, there's been quite a few of this in the month of January. There was two other ones in Brooklyn, and like you said, I think we are better. Yeah. I think we're moving in the as far as the younger guys compared to when we came on, which is a good thing. You know, if they think they're in trouble,
yeah,
they're giving it now.
Yeah.
You know, as far as giving it, and I know the just recently in Harlem there was an EAB without the actual word mayday, but you know, obviously, once
right.
again, you know, you're in that tough situation. If you get both of them done, great. But even one of them will be helpful.
Exactly.
So, Steve, you know, in your experience, I'm sure you've been a chief a long time. You've had some maydays in your career. Is there any that might stick out that?
Oh,
you know, that
yeah.
You could learn from.
I'll talk about the one I remember that I had as an incident commander, as opposed to I've had a few as the RIT chief that were resolved very quickly. But as the incident commander, it didn't go so well. But just a couple of observations I wanted to make. One of the things that Chuck said that I picked up on, he said, you know, radio discipline. And I know down there, you guys, you don't have a separate channel. If there's a mayday, it's run on the same fire ground, you know, on the handy talkie, right? It's not a separate,
right.
separate communications. What we do up here,
right.
and I'm not so sure I agree with it, is we switch. So if there's a mayday comes in, they have everybody on the fire ground except the firefighter who gave the mayday and the RIT team, right? They stay on that initial fire ground channel. Everybody else is supposed to migrate up one channel. So if your fire ground channel is two, you go up to three. If it's three, you go to four, and so on.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And right. I remember going FDIC and having Salka say, all right, raise your hand. How many go to a different channel? And a bunch of raises. He says, all right, how many don't? He says, the ones who go to a different channel, you're wrong. And he said, it's just another facet of the
yeah.
the operation.
That's true.
And
yeah. Yeah.
I get his point in that, you know, yeah. especially because a lot of these things are resolved by companies that are in there, that for situational
mm-hmm.
awareness, you know, you everybody
right.
being on the same page kind of. And not to mention half our guys, not half, but – every fire I listen to, almost every fire I go to, somebody's on the wrong channel. They're on channel one, right?
Right.
And
right.
you know, fire alarm picks it up and goes, "Hey, you know, switch to channel two." But
right.
you know, so switching channels for everybody in the middle of fire operations is difficult. You're up
yeah.
on a roof. You're
yeah.
crawling down a hallway. It's like you got to fumble with this little button, and so I got a lot of issues
yeah.
with that. But
yeah.
you know, it just when you talk about overwhelming. And the fact that, you know, so you have communications, you're trying to get to these people that are down and figure out where they are, who they are, what's going on, and you still have fire ground operations going, it gets chaotic pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, you know,
what you guys do differently, which is kind of cool, though. Chucky, they talk right to the dispatcher. We have to go through our
yes.
our handset in the rig. So, is that correct, Steve? You could
well.
You're on the
so,
fire ground. Yeah.
So our fire ground channels are repeated. So fire alarm hears them and
right.
can simulcast
right.
on all of them if they want to. So
yeah.
I actually really like that because I mean I'm not saying that
yeah.
it's better than your system. I see the benefits mm-hmm. of both, but
right.
fire alarm is you know they're in their little bunker down in the Fenway and there's a bunch
right.
of them listening. They can often pick up you know garbled
right.
communications. Where on a fire ground, you know, I find. When I'm listening in the office, I can hear everything. When I'm on the fire ground, it's like, what did you say? Well, you know, it's just
right.
not seems to
right.
be not as clear. Fire alarm will often be able to say, you know, hey, they're asking you for this, that, you know, they basically be able to repeat the message. Not always, but and they can simulcast. They can pick up on a lot of stuff that, you know, that
yeah.
sometimes the
oh.
the IC can't. But
yeah.
But so for the few maydays I've been involved in as a RIT or, you know, a second alarm chief, most of those have been resolved very quickly. One was a guy actually fell down the stairs, but they found him right quick and he was fine. Another one was a multiple alarm fire over in Charlestown, and can't find this guy. It's a mayday, and I said I just left him. He was on the third floor. Hold on, and you know he walked out of the building. I said there he is. Mayday's right. Over. But Beacon Street. I don't know if Chuck, you know anything about the fire?
The brownstone.
The initial company pulled up and went. Right, you know, Greg. They took their line to the basement. I showed up a minute later. There wasn't much showing, and I wasn't there 3 minutes. I think it was, just under 3 minutes, and all hell broke loose. And the mayday came
quick,
in
huh?
seconds after that. The RIT chief and safety chief had just arrived on scene, and I had been a district chief for about 2 years, a little longer, and I had had some pretty good fires, but I have to be honest, I was overwhelmed. Because a bunch of guys came tumbling down the brownstone stairs, and I thought that was 33, and it wasn't. That was another company that was trying to make the stairs. They got blown out and burned. And, that I was fortunate that there was a safety chief and a RIT chief who sort of took over, the plan to get in there. It didn't work out. I mean, the fire was wind driven from the back, and people were trying to go in the front because one of the messages the guys gave was that they were in the front of the basement. Turns out they were kind of in the middle of the basement, and really the only way would have been to have good water in the back, because there were no hydrants, and really not took a long time to get water back there to come in with the wind. And they ended up, they got trapped by the fire, and we heard them transmit for the next 10 or 12 minutes until they ran out of air. And it just, talk about being overwhelmed. I mean, I listened to the tapes. I caught the mayday right away. But there were a lot of messages where, they're calling command, and I didn't answer. And I was like, I don't remember hearing that. They talk about auditory exclusion when you get stressed. Hearing goes. And it's just you're talking about being alone trying to handle a mayday, especially one that's like guys are really in trouble. It was a tough day. So again, they don't happen often, but, you got to prepare for what you're going to do. And also I think, I did some work with the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation about, you're going to spend just a little bit of time as an incident commander thinking about what if that does happen? It's everybody's worst nightmare, right? As a chief that you're going to, you're going to end the shift and a couple of guys are, a guy is not going to go home. Right. But, it still happens, and at every one of those, somebody was in command. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we've, thank God. I mean, when we first came on a job, I think they said that, we used to lose 6 firefighters a year with the average. And for the last 20 years, I think it's, 9/11 aside, obviously. But, we've become much better. I think the equipment's gotten so much better. I mean, guys are surviving things that you would never survive. So, it's a catch-22 though, because we didn't go as deep when we didn't have the bunker gear. So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, but, it's training and it's, advances in communication that, we've gotten much better at this stuff, but it does happen, and I think, it's the mental preparedness. I found myself the other night just almost in denial. I was like, no, there's no mayday. And it was bad. I mean, the fire, I couldn't even see the fire building. I mean, tell. I mean, it was charged. I mean, you could tell when you're talking to firefighters and officers and all you hear is the mask and you can't see the building, it's bad, it took me a second. That's when I gave it right to the deputy. I was like, Joe, you got it. And I got to get back to what's going on here. But it's stressful. It's like getting walloped, and it's like you got to orientate yourself and like focus. Like, okay, this has really happened. We have to deal with it, So anyways, while we're talking about Maydays, the FDNY came up with a new tool We just did a whole month of training on it. It's called the Fast Pack. It used to be a 45-minute cylinder. Now they shrunk it down to 15 minutes. And Eddie Schneider from 30 Truck worked with R&D on it. And they did a great job on it. It's packed in a nice yellow bag. It's got all the – it actually has a remote gauge on it, and it's got a whistle. You're talking about all the different sounds on a fire ground. They come up with a whistle, which I said to him when we were doing it. I said, so – you know, what happens when you hear the whistle? I said, well, that means my tea is ready. You know, the kettle boils, yeah. Right? You know? But, so, you know, there's all these advances.
That's great.
I don't know if you saw it, Chucky, but it got old after a while, but I kept using the same joke over and over. Because he kept saying, like, well, what's the one sound you don't hear on the fire ground? I said, you know, he says, the whistle, right? I said, yeah, unless you're making a cup of tea, you know. But, so, But anyway, so...
So the idea of it is it's a lighter, more maneuverable pack, and, you know, it's got enough air.
Yeah.
If you get to the guy, you get him out of there.
Yeah. But, you know, it's one of these things that I said when we were doing the drill. I said, you know, we spend a lot of time, and we spoke about this, Steve. I know you guys don't carry the life-saving rope, but we do carry the rope, and we drill on it extensively. Monday and Tuesday, we mandate the truck companies and engine companies to drill on that rope every Monday and Tuesday. They alternate, you know, and it's one of those things that, again, I've been involved in a few rope rescues, and it's very stressful. You know, you got fire coming up through the roof and through the cock loft. People are screaming. They want to jump. It's all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, and I think this is even more stressful. And I was kind of advocating that this should be drilled on like once a week, at least minimum, because I know, Chuck, did you see the new Fast Pack with the different gauge? It's like a buddy breathing type of thing. Yeah. So, you know, try picture doing that in the basement of a brownstone and, you know, it's fire over your head and, you know, people screaming at you, you know. It doesn't seem like going to I would encourage any departments out there to look into this, because I think – you know, we talk about rescue and firefighters. We deal with the fire first, but air is second, you know. And if we could get a quick 15 minutes or whatever up to the firefighter that sounds, you know, it's gonna extend their time, right?
So, yeah.
I'll give them – I guess Frank's not going to call in. He was going to call in. He was going to surprise us, but I think he's caught up in something. So if anyone wants to call, we got 760-454-8852. And that's our number for the guest calling. I don't think we get many people calling in. I think it's a rare occurrence, you know. But anyway, so, Chucky, how long are we going to be doing this May Day for? Is it for the whole month of February?
Yes. Yeah, it's cycle 7. So, we're almost in the – I guess it's almost 2 years now that we've been doing them as per recommendations from Chief's Annual Education Day in 2017. So it's a good product. The brothers and sisters that are chiefs want it. It's in-service training, you know, led by, you know, guys with experience. And obviously whoever's working that tour, you got the experience and the inexperience. So it's a lot of positive feedback from it, so we're going to keep continuing it. So May Days will go to the end of the month. Yeah.
What's the what's the format, Chief? In other words, do they do a scenario?
So Steve, what we created was we basically take whatever footage we can get from a fire that took place in New York City, and we show a short video anywhere, depending on the footage, from 1 minute to 5 minutes. One happens to be 4 minutes. We have some real good footage. And we put some transmissions in it, handy talkie recordings that happened at that fire. And we basically, it's like a round table. We stop it, we show the tape, we stop it. Our facilitators go around the table from basically the start of the fire. Okay, your first due, what are you going to do? What transmissions? What are you requesting? And we have, you know, I create a facilitate sheet for the facilitators to go through and just going around the, you know, like a tabletop, okay, what do you think of, why would you do that? And, you know, it depends on the facilitator, obviously, but it's been getting a lot of good feedback because, you know, we're basically sharing experiences to help make better decisions, you know, to sum it up in a nutshell. So we want to share our experiences to help make better decisions next time. And, you know, so that's the basic gist of it, you know, how we go about it. And it's in-service training, BCs and DCs.
Right.
So it's specifically for Maydays, or you also just do, you know, just general tactics,
yeah,
like first actions?
From, what was the last one? We did cockwall fires, taxpayers, high rise, you know, high rises we did. I'm trying to just think of some of the clutter. Actually, the last one was clutter, maybe. This is cycle number 7. So we've Every topic, it's always different. And it's usually based off of something that just recently occurred in New York City. So it's kind of hot and relevant. So every fire, the one we're doing with this May Day, there was actually a May Day in Flatbush, Brooklyn. The one-year anniversary was January 20th. And so that's the fire that we're doing. We have a lot of footage from it and a lot of, you know, a lot of real good actions done at that job. And as you know, Steve and Dan, I mean, you know, I think being a BC or a DC district chief, you know, standing in the street with a Mayday is a lot different when we were firefighters, lieutenants, and captains. It's a, you know, just the reaction. As you said, Dan, it was almost like it didn't happen, right? It's almost like you don't want to even hear those words. Whereas firefighter, lieutenant, captain, you're in there, you're doing it. It's a different reaction. My experience standing in the street, it's just so much more difficult because you almost feel helpless in a way. Yeah, you can communicate, you can talk, you can send resources in, but, you know, that communication and whether it's radio discipline or whether it's, you know, just you don't have help to delegate anything or the message, you know, that firefighter or officer's in a real bad predicament and it's gobbled or it's incoherent. There's just so many different factors and so many curveballs thrown at you. It's so difficult, as we all know. But I think it's good to practice, right, Dan? We joke about it all the time. You're driving in. I'm always giving my Maydays an urgence driving in just to practice
always.
That as I drive to work.
Yeah. Over and over, nonstop. Muscle memory. Just keep doing it over and over. Before we wrap it up, maybe I'll just, you know, let's talk about this last issue and then maybe we'll just wrap it up because we're at the hour mark. But Chucky and I were doing a few months ago, we were doing some private dwelling remote tactical drills. And one of the things that he and I talked about was, you know, I said to Chucky, I said, well, Chucky, how do you feel about using a writ for dressing up the building? And I'm really kicking myself that I didn't do it. Like, I don't know why I didn't have my fast truck. I was meant to do it, and I got sidetracked with some civilian, some injuries and stuff, you know. And, it's very easy to get sidetracked on a fire ground. And I was really remiss.
Yeah.
But that's my SOP. Like, I grabbed my fast, and I'm like, listen, I want you to put some portables up, take the window. We had window bars on the first floor. I wanted them off. And I just got so distracted. But I find myself with the fast, they're a great asset. I think that there has to be some limitations, though. I think you could use them, but I think don't commit them, overcommit. They have to be available instantaneously because it's very easy. And funny, Steve, we were in that. I don't know if you were with me. One of your chiefs came in, and he was razzing one of the chiefs about using a truck company again. They were the writ. And he was giving them a bit of the business, you know, about using this truck company. They were writ, and they used them for fire duty, you know. And I think that's tempting sometimes, but I think we really have to discipline ourselves to keep that fast. I did it once in the last few years. I needed a towel ladder desperately. And the captain, I give him some marks. You know, he pulled up, and I'm directing him to the front of the building. He's telling me, that, no, Chief, he says, I'm the fast truck. I can't. I said, listen, get the towel ladder up. But I grabbed the rescue immediately. I said, Tommy, I said to him, do me a favor. Just do this for a few minutes till I get the next fast truck here. And it was no problem. But I don't think, honestly, we shouldn't make that a practice. I think that fast truck, that RIT team is for us.
And so, they have to be there because, you know.
I agree. I got a couple points on that. So one is the what you were talking about, softening the building. We call that proactive actions of the rent. So, yeah, they can, you know, they can maybe throw a ladder. What you don't want them to do is get too involved in something. So, yes, they're not available. And unfortunately, what a lot of incident commanders up here will do, especially the district chiefs, is if they, they'll grab them and say, I need you to, you know, do this. They'll give them a fire ground assignment, and then they'll say, send another writ, which is okay, except then it's going to take a little while for that next company to get there, right? So for a while now, you have no actual assigned writ, or maybe instead of two, you'll only have one. Some of the chiefs up here were adamant about not doing that, and I remember Tom Dunn, who used to work on your job. He's retired deputy.
Mm-hmm.
And his thing, think like an incident commander, he was, you know, he said, you know, he never would put a fast truck to work. I think it would have to be immediate life safety of civilians. Like if I knew there was a rescue that needed to be made or some action that needed to be taken immediately that was going to really make a difference in civilian life safety, then I would do it. And I'd say, well, it's putting our guys at greater risk, but that's what we get paid for. But, you know, just because, hey, I need a third line on the top floor, I'll, you know, they're here in case something goes wrong. Right. You know, wait for the next engine that shows up and they'll do it, you know?
Yeah. Not to make excuses, but the reason I did it was that I had three very serious exposures. And if I didn't get this fire knocked down, I was going to lose three buildings. And
that
was the decision.
That was the decision. There's always extenuating circumstances. Yeah. You know, you can't. That's why I don't like SOPs that ever have the words never, not, you know, like you just don't know what you're going to run into. So, you know, as a general principle, you want to keep at least one company dedicated to that mission.
Yeah. I really like your team. I like that whole engine truck chief concept. I think it's just fabulous. I mean, you got a ready-made team ready to go. I mean, you know, at your disposal, you know. Chucky, how are you feeling about dressing up the building with your fast truck?
Yeah, I have always allowed them to stay within sight. You know, I don't want them going in the structure. Portables, maybe cutting some window bars, as far as flaking out some line. If you know, like in my time as a chief officer, I have never put a fast truck to work for fire duty. I have only put them to work in a mayday or situation, you know, and that's just my own thing that I had, you know, I guess through the years, listening to guys like my captains, you know, whether it was Captain Corcoran or Captain Vigiano, Captain Watts, you know, the different guys that I had, different officers, you know, that was always my mindset. But I have definitely used them for portables in front, window bars, helping out, stretch that, flake that line out, little things like that, you know, move those garbage bills out, you know, things where they're not going in the structure or behind the structure and getting lost, you know. Because, you know, we all know everyone wants to get a little dirty. It's easy to disappear.
Yeah. I know when we first started with the fast trucks, I remember the first time I got assigned as a fast. I forget, I was in the 7th Division. I didn't even know what it meant.
It was fat. You remember they were fat?
Fat. Yeah, it was a fat truck, whatever it was.
It was originally fat. Do you remember that, Danny?
Yeah, and the chief, the deputy, he didn't even know what to do with me. He was just like, I said, chief, what am I doing? He goes, I don't know. Just, you know, just stay here, you know. But I think we've evolved. I think the chiefs now are thinking of ways to, like Steve just said, to be proactive and, you know, use them without committing them. You know, like just.
Yeah, I like what Steve does.
Find that balance.
I like that whole concept.
Yeah. Find that balance, you know, because, you know, it's a resource. And, you know, I think it's been such a long time since I've been on a back step, but we didn't even have the fast truck when I was a fireman, but I think the firefighters now view it as a sort of like a, oh crap, you know, with a fast truck, you know, like, instead of maybe thinking, you know, yeah, you're not going to really be in the game, but you could still be part of it, you know, just don't get too involved in a game, you know what I'm saying? So, well, I tell you what, I think we're just about out of time and no one's calling and Frank is not going to call. So, again, I want to thank Chief Downey and Chief Schaefer. great topic tonight. Thanks for bringing it up, Chucky. It was just a perfect opportunity to talk about it. And
thanks for the invite, Dan. Appreciate it.
Always, Chucky.
Same here,
Stevie,
Dan. Thank
again.
You. Always a pleasure.
Thanks. And four. So
Steve,
I'm going to let you guys.
Always great talking with you, Steve.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. Dan, we'll see you.
Right.
Take care.
All right, Steve. Right. Thanks again.
Stay safe.
I'm gonna cut. All right, guys. Take care. Bye bye. Ciao. Bye bye.
Stay safe.
Stay
brother.
Safe. Bye bye. Bye. Okay. So that was Chief Downey and Chief Schaefer from New York and Boston, two deputy chiefs with tons of experience, and especially with May Days. I know Steve told that story about Beacon Street, and that's a NIOSH report. I encourage anybody that wants to know more information about it, you could go on to the NIOSH website and check out the back bay of Beacon Street. It's some good lessons learned. You know, that fire actually is very reminiscent of a fire I had when I was a probie, actually. I was in a very, very similar situation in a brownstone. Myself and another probie were in there with a covering captain. It was our second job in the night. And we had some different manpower issues. Someone had gotten hit, injured, so we had a covering guy on the roof, and he kind of didn't do what he was supposed to do, and we had some miscommunications. And next thing you know, the door in the back opens, and there's a wall of fire chasing us out. And if it wasn't for this captain, Tony Alva, I wouldn't be talking to you right now, because he literally saved our lives, myself and Frank Simpson. So this is serious stuff. Google NIOSH. I love reading the NIOSH reports. I learned from every single one of them. There's a whole slew of them, but they do a great job in getting to the crux of the problem in the fatal fires. So check it out. And until then, be safe. Always willing to hear from you guys on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, easy to find. Just Google my name. And with that, I'll see you next time.